What age were you at this time, Carl? How old were you at this time?
I was around 19 years old.
You probably were too old to tend bushel at that time.
No, we had a bushel measure, a half bushel measure that we tended and put in bags, which we later carried up in a loft, usually a grain bin, and dumped it.
This half bushel or bushel that we talk about was a measure, a wooden measure, and it sat on the side of the machine, and the oats fell through a screen into this measure. And it usually was a small boy's job to tend the measure, taking the oats away from
them. We'd turn them out. One would feed the, what do we call feeding the machine, and the other one would tend the measure for what we called a run, usually 25 or 30 two bushel bags. Then we would carry them up and dump them and start over. And the fellow was tending the bushel measure would start feeding for the next run.
Now this grain that you were thrashing, this was bound by a machine that made bundles out of it in the field?
Not always bound. A lot of it was hauled in loose.
Oh.
Cut with what we called at that time a sweep rake. And it wasn't bound. But I can remember long before that when we used to just, this was two horses. We used to thrash. One horsepower, and the grain would simply fall to the floor where it was picked up and put through a little sand mill to clean.
We've been talking about grain. Farmers also stored hay, and some of them, perhaps not you, but some of them had hay to sell.
Those that had a surplus usually got, during the winter, a hay press who would come in and bale the hay and sell it to hay dealers.
What price would they get for that, Carl? Do you recall what it would be, a ton?
I don't remember.
But the dealers bought it, and did they sell it locally or did they ship it out?
No, a lot of it was shipped to Boston, as I remembered, and the price, I believe, was fairly good, too.
The hay that we raised, that was raised in those days, was it a clover mixture, was it a timothy, or?
It was a clover mixture, timothy and clover, mostly timothy, I think.
Did they sell quite a lot of this hay to the woodsmen, the lumbermen?
Yes. What didn't go to Boston, perhaps the best grade was shipped to Boston, and what didn't go to good out there was sold to local lumbermen, I believe. I do recall what we got for the oats at that time, what we hauled in through the woodsmen. Usually a cent a pound. When we got a cent a pound, we thought it was an awful nice price.
And that would be 32 cents a bushel.
32 cents a bushel.
Do you remember what lumber cost you at that time?
Lumber at that time was, my neighbor built his house right across the road. He paid $14 delivered.
A thousand.
$14 a thousand delivered. And it was delivered by Sadler Brothers from birth.
When you first came on this farm, Carl, was there a house here?
No, there wasn't.
Where was the house?
On the farm below.
How far was that?
300 yards, perhaps.
And you moved the house up here?
We did, on blocking.
How long did it take you?
It took us a week or 10 days, and it cost me $55.
This included building the cellar?
No,
that was extra.
Moving the house on the foundation after we had built the cellar.
What did you use for power to pull the house?
We used one horse, just a small horse with a dead man, we called it.
And this, of course, meant block and tack. Blocks.
Yeah, double blocks.
Did the carpenter or whoever you had supervise the job bring his own material to move the house on?
We hauled the blocking from Presque Isle and delivered it back there after the house was moved.
That's something now where it was moved to?
In the same place.
Okay, now the barn, was there a barn here then?
We had no barn, so in 1912 we got ready to build a barn. I bought my lumber from a friend of mine up near Grand Falls, who cut it, had it sawed and hauled it to the station where I went, where I loaded it on flat cars and shipped it over here.
How long did it take you to build the barn?
Everything was done by hand, and it took probably 2 weeks to frame it and get it ready for raising.
Now this business of framing, there were men who specialized in that.
Yes, there were. We had no power tools at that time. We did all the cutting and mortising by hand, which took quite some time.
And all of these pieces were laid about the yard, and then there come a day when you had a barn raising.
We invited all the neighbors to share with us.
I remember.
The women came in and did the cooking, and we had a kind of a party.
Barn raising.
Usually got the barn up in one day.
Now, these pieces, they didn't always fit, did they?
Not always, depending on the framer you had.
And when they put a barn together, did they put it together on the ground and then lift up one side of the barn, you might say?
Yes, we did. Usually four spans we would raise, all put together, and then tie them in with
the other pieces.
Yeah.
The pieces all fitted together. It was planned so that when you lifted one side of the barn, it fitted against the side, the opposite side.
That is right.
Yeah. When you got them tied together, now the roof wasn't on here, was it? That was a separate job, really.
No, we had to put the rafters on after that, which was hauled up individually and put together on up and put together up there.
Yeah. Now most of these barns were quite big and quite high.
Mine wasn't so big. Mine was 42 by 50 feet with a 14-foot post.
And that would make it about 40 feet high at the peak?
I don't know.
Two 14-foot?
Yes, probably about that.
Be about 40 feet high.
Yeah.
And you use this to store your hay and grain. And on the lower floor, you had your livestock.
That's right.
Well, you used on these barns now only wooden shingles.
All wooden shingles at that time.
And the boards that were sawed, were they always nice and square?
No, not always. There weren't any of them plain. They were all just roughly sawed and varied somewhat in thickness.
And there weren't many spikes or nails used around the framing of a barn, was there?
Mostly pinned together with pins.
Wooden pins.
With wooden pins that we made as long as we were framing the barn, made the wooden pins along with it.
And the wooden pins had to be driven into the holes to hold the braces and
that's right.
Such together. Carl, we've talked about the barns. Now, along about 1905, 10, and along there, potato industry commenced to expand, and that called for an expansion of storage facilities. The farmers started building small houses of their own on their own farms. Do you recall the type of construction that was used here?
With a horse and scoop. They scooped out a hole in the ground and then laid up, brought in field rock and laid up the walls, plastering them later on, and then built a top on that, usually holding 15 to 2,500 barrels.
Some of this construction was made with cedar poles or logs.
Yes, the early ones were. And they made a very, very good storage, but of course it didn't last as long as the rocks that they were used a little later.
The storage didn't require much heat in the wintertime, did it?
Not too much, usually a little.
These houses were boarded up on both sides of the rafters, and then it was usually stuffed with sawdust, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
And this made for a type of ventilation too, didn't it?
Yes.
When you put the heat in there, it worked its way through the sawdust and the roof.
They didn't use the top at that time, they just used the bottom part where they had a little iron stove set up, burning wood for the winter.
These potatoes kept very well in these storages.
Very well, indeed, very well.
And sometimes far into the summer.
Yes, they did. Much longer than we keep them in the up-to-date houses.
The potatoes that were kept in these storages now, when were they shipped out?
Usually during the winter months. Usually towards spring, seed was shipped late in the winter. We used to load them in heated cars, regular box cars that would be lined with boards, and a fireman go with the cars as far as Boston and come back and take another car or a bunch of cars. Usually one man would fire four or five on a trip to Boston.
And this was a winter job for some people, wasn't
it? This was a winter job for a good many people.
I recall stories of these cars being set off on sidings for a few days, and they would have to be fired constantly to keep them from freezing.
That was the fireman's job. He was supposed to do that, and supposed to
know. The farmer in those days didn't ship his own potatoes very often, did he?
No, he didn't.
He sold them to a dealer.
Yes.
And the dealer did the transaction.
That is right.
The farmer, his final sale was to the dealer. He got his money there.
That's all.
Later, it developed to where the farmer started shipping his own seed. You spoke a while ago about raising seed for someone to ship to New Jersey. I believe that probably was where the farmers started getting into the shipping deal.
In 1912, I got a connection with a man from Virginia, and for the next 10 years, I grew seeds for him to be shipped and loaded, did my own loading.
Those potatoes now that you loaded, what kind of a container did they go in?
They were loaded in 165-pound bags, which we call bale bags.
They were a real heavy burlap, weren't they?
Real heavy burlap.
And how did you load them? As I remember, if you didn't have hand trucks to push them around on.
We would dig a carload or two, and they were ready to take them just as soon as they had laid and matured a little bit, perhaps a week. We would, with a hand rack, grade them and bag them in the, I did it on the barn, in the barn, part of my barn. And I would haul them down and load them in boxcars early in the season.
You handled these bags alone?
I did a good many cars.
But the general practice was for two men to handle one of the bags, wasn't it?
Yeah, we'd take a hold of the, what we call the ears and the stick, and carry them into the car.
You had a stick about 2.5 feet long, and you laid the bag across it.
Right.
And one man on each side, one ear and one end of the stick.
That's right.
And when you got in the car, you piled them, what, 4 or 5 high?
Usually 5 high. 25 in it here.
How many barrels would you put in a car?
250 usually. 250 bags.
These bags came from, as I recall it, were made special for this purpose, or were they something else?
Coffee bags we used a lot.
I
think those were 150 pounds. I rightly don't know where they got the heavy burlap that way.
I was thinking about the coffee bean being shipped in them and then reused for potatoes.
That's right, that's what they were.
Gradually, through the years, the size of these bags got down smaller and smaller.
Yes, a 150-pound bag was much lighter than 165, but after a while they got heavy, so that they got to 100 pounds. Now we're using 50s and down as low as 10.
Do I recall a 120-pound bag in there too for a while?
Some markets demanded a 120-pound bag, I believe, while others wanted the 165 or the 150.
These bags were closed by sewing with a yarn or a string and a long needle.
Twine, yes. They were all sewed by hand. Sewed by hand, graded by hand, and handled by hand.